amor consigo.
Ay, la, 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 ay, la, 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 ay, la, la, ay, la, la, la.
Me dicen que no hay caimán en ese río de arconcitos. Ayer que me fui a bañar, iba con mis hermanitos. Allí me encontré el caimán, con caimán, el caimancito.
Apoyado por el PRI, ojalá y no se ha olvidado y que se acuerde de mí. Si no dirán que yo las quiero a todas, este es el mero caimán que se toque en Tamaulipas.
Bueno.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm doing good, you know. We gotta get this show on the road, though.
Okay.
Both you and me, we got stuff to do.
I'm tired of planning the show. I want to do the show already.
Okay, well, let's do it then. Okay, so let's see, what did we hear? We just heard off the top of the show, we heard these very famous people called...
Hermanos Calderón.
Hermanos Calderón, El Caimán.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes. Okay, so what are we talking about this? So you went to the hackerspace, the Norte Lab.
Yeah, I have good news and bad news.
Okay, let's introduce it a little bit though, because last show we talked a little bit about a hacker space. There was an event that was going to be organized at this hacker space. You were going to go. It was going to be in Ensenada, which is right south of Tijuana, which is at the northwesternmost part of Mexico. And Ensenada, we talked about Ensenada being a really cool place. A lot of science goes on there, a lot of research, a lot of technology. And so what happened? How did it go?
Do you want the good news or the bad news first?
Let's do the bad news first.
The bad news, okay.
Okay.
The bad news, or at least I was kind of disappointed with this, is that Norte Lab, that is called a hackerspace, is listed in hackerspaces.org. It's not really a hackerspace. It's more of a collective, and they organize events and workshops and everything. But there isn't any space. There isn't a physical space. Mm. When I asked the guy that where was the hackerspace, he said that it was kind of a cyberspace.
Okay.
So I was kind of disappointed, but there's a lot of good news.
Okay, cool. All right. Are they planning to, I'm sorry, are they planning, are they looking for a place, like an actual physical place then? I mean, is that planned for the future somehow? Or?
Okay, let me tell you how it went. I went there, I went to CEARTE, that it's a center for arts and culture in Ensenada and all in Baja. And I went there, I met the guy, and I went because there was going to be a workshop called Electronics for Artists. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. And there were a lot of people, like 17, 18 people waiting. And I met the guy and said, come this way. And we went like to a backstage full of stuff, you know, tables with electrical outlets and everything. I thought that was the hackerspace. So I was really excited because it looked really cool.
Wow.
But I asked him, is this a hackerspace? Because I don't see a lot of computer stuff. There was a lot of, you know, stuff used in theater and everything. He said, no, this is a space for, you know, like
a storage space?
Yeah,
like a storage.
Yeah. It was used for lots of
it was like a multi-use space then. How many people went?
Like 18. And most notably, a guy from Nortec, Bostich, was mm-hmm. there. Several people.
Were they hipsters?
You could divide it in two people. People that knew a lot about electronics, but nothing about art. And people that knew lots of art and nothing about electronics.
Okay.
So it was difficult.
It was polarized. Yeah. Into the typical two camps that always go to these kinds of events, then. At least in Mexico.
Of course. No, everywhere, you know. So that guy, Miguel Monroy, he's head of Nortelab or the founder. He works in CEARTE, and he's in charge of the multimedia department, something like that. He uses CEARTE to...
Hold on. What's CEARTE then? What is that?
It's a cultural center that has a gallery, projection room, a stage for... place, has a little bookstore, several artistic, you know, spaces. But what I found remarkable about this guy is that he's introducing technological elements to that place. So that's really cool. That guy is really convinced of the hacker ethic and a guy that wants information to be free uh-huh. and that looks or approach work as a game, he is a graphical designer. He's not he likes programming, but he didn't study. Mm-hmm. And his thesis is about the graphical interface of a Linux Argentinian Linux distribution. So
what's the name of it?
I don't even remember.
Uh huh.
But I think his work is really useful because, you know, even distributions like Fedora or Ubuntu sometimes have terrible design choices.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that in this show, actually. What's the guy's name, the organizer?
Miguel Monroy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So he was a graphic designer first and then, like, moved on to more...
He already programmed before he was a graphic designer because he's that something in electronics he works on, and he always liked it. And he told me something that even when he was a child, he started with Commodore 64, and he learned BASIC when he was
He had a C64. He's got to be a hacker, you know. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, I was surprised at his way of thinking. Have you read The Hacker Ethic by Pekka Himanen, a book?
No.
It's a wonderful description of hackers, classical hackers, in the way of Linus Torvalds, in the way of Steve Wozniak, and that guy practically fits in the description that book makes about mm-hmm. hackers.
There was a Pure Data workshop in Tijuana at this place. Hacker workshops in Tijuana or something like that, related mostly to media as well, because that's kind of one of the things that I start seeing a lot with uh-huh. or sort of jumbled up or jumbled into or mashed into the whole hacker scene.
And yeah.
These guys are really ambitious in their own field. They're not limited to – they want it all, you know?
Yeah.
They want to use these really – strange, wonderful, and powerful frameworks for doing live multimedia. The more shit they connect to it, the better. And they're always doing this, all this crazy shit. They're combining lasers with LiDAR and Xbox Kinect, you know, to scan the room. And if people are jumping, then the music changes pitch. And, you know, all that crazy shit.
Okay.
Here's the site I was looking for, actually. Here you go. Yeah, I just sent it to you. So okay. As you can see...
Oh, yeah. I tried to find these guys. They don't answer the phone. Really? I have been calling them.
Yeah.
I don't know if this...
It's thing, fake.
This Protolab, this center of free art and technology even exists anymore. They don't answer emails. They don't answer the phone. So I don't know what's up with them.
It's fake.
It's fake?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if we should. I don't know if we should restart recording because the. Yeah, it's the sound quality is really bad, actually.
Really? Well, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
We should go to a song.
All right.
I like chiptunes, and this. MP3, it's a song by a guy nicknamed Little Scale, and it's part of a kind of a contest called Laser Scale 2010 that consisted in like five guys, chiptune artists, making one song a day, every day in 2010. So they ended up with 365 songs each. And this is one of them, number 16. The sixth. I am guessing this was composed in January 16th. This song is obviously made with a NES chip. It's called "Demons That Devour Human Flesh." Let's hear it.
Wrap this up. Yes.
Yeah.
So, right. So I just wanted to say that there's all these kinds of meetings, the 2600 meetings, the Super Happy Dev House. There's this other kind of meeting every month or so. It's kind of web-related. It's more of a financial sort of networking, sort of investor networking thing. It's Mexico only or Latin America only, called Tequila Valley. It's mm-hmm. not so cool, but, you know, it is what it is, and it's kind of interesting. Sometimes a lot of people locally, a lot of people have been kind of shunning it, kind of saying like, yeah, we really don't want to go there anymore because not a lot of stuff happens, and it's not really technical, and there's not a lot of investors going around. So, I mean, so the meeting kind of, you know, since there's no real, like, focus to it, it gets kind of pointless. So people, it's been dwindling down. Then we mentioned the Protolab guys, the guys who kind of packed up overnight and have never been seen from again. And yeah. this mysterious SD Hack Lab, which we just found out about, that we really don't have any clue, and we don't have any time to read it on the air and kind of elaborate on it. But we'll get back to you we'll get back to you guys. We'll explore all this, and we'll maybe we can come up with some sort of improvised classification of different hackers, different hacker meetings, different hacker spaces. So back to you. You wanted to talk about your experiences with the Kindle. So what's going on?
Well, maybe my experiences with my Game Boy flashcard would be more interesting.
Okay.
The Kindle, maybe later.
So so what about the Game Boy? What did you do with it? Is this the Game Boy Advance? The Game Boy?
No, Game Boy Color. I'm Game really Color. Old school with my gaming consoles. 1998 Game Boy Color. I recently bought a Game Boy Color, and my real interest in it wasn't because of the games, was more because I wanted to buy a flash cartridge for the Game Boy. Well, I like Pokemon, but it's more like there's a blank cartridge, custom made, and you can put whatever ROM you like in that cartridge through a USB cable. So there's this ROM called SDA. It's used for chiptunes. It's really hard to use, really. It's not really intuitive.
What's the name of the software again?
LSDJ. It's really cool. I mean, you can make music through the chip of the Game Boy and sounds really authentic. It is authentic, really.
Right. It's the real Game Boy.
Exactly. And a lot of performers use that live on stage. Well, that's something that I want to learn how to use. So
how long do you think it's going to take until you make your own tune? I mean, this would be a nice place to debut your masterpiece, you know.
Yeah, I haven't thought of it, but I don't know. It's really difficult to use. I mean, you have to learn from scratch. I mean, the screen just shows you some numbers, like
it only shows you binary.
Almost, it's almost X. I mean,
almost X.
I mean, it's like.
Is it in green and black?
Have you seen X editors? Hexadecimal editors.
Well, I know what hex is, but I've never used a hex editor. It's harder than that.
More or less the same interface.
Is it green and black? Does it have Japanese characters running down the screen?
It wouldn't be much different to me.
It would be the same.
I will send you a screenshot so you can see it for yourself. It's actually X now. I'm looking at it.
So how long do you think it'll take until you make a decent chiptune from that?
I'm guessing like a year or half a year. I don't know. I have to try.
We'll be close on your progress then. We'll be checking into that every few podcasts.
Maybe I'll show you something next time so you can laugh.
You could just say it's a really minimalist tune inspired by Brian Eno or something like that. Stockhausen or Philip Glass or something like that.
That would be probably a good idea.
So speaking of smooth transitions, let's bash Unity.
Okay, yeah.
Let's talk about that. A lot of people are becoming really unhappy. First of all, we're talking about Ubuntu, because last podcast I said Ubuntu, which is wrong. Mm-hmm. You got to pronounce it the right way, which is without the...
Ubuntu.
And then, Ubuntu 11.04, and this is, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time that a Unity interface comes by default. It's
Oh, well, you can, if you count the netbook spin... In the netbook spin, Unity was default.
I do have a netbook, but I didn't try it on that because I like. Look, let's get one thing straight. One thing that netbooks, or at least netbooks when I still had the money to buy one, netbooks are not really conceived or made. They're not fast machines. They're not powerful.
No, they're really slow.
They're really slow. They're really strapped for memory, strapped for a lot of things. So I don't really understand why they would release Unity for a netbook. I mean, I haven't even tested Unity. I despise it so much. I've seen videos, read a lot of reviews, and I've read the conceptual, the reasons behind why they want to do it, the general principles, the implementation, and I don't like any of that. I don't even like how it looks. I mean, I've been following Ubuntu since 8.04, and I've always liked how it looked. And this is the first time I really don't like how it works. I don't like how it feels. It's just
wrong.
Where do we want to start with this? So how are we going to, you know, bash Unity? There's so much ground to cover, and we don't have a lot of time. So how are we going to do that? Or do you want me to start?
There's nothing Unity has that Gnome doesn't have.
Right.
It just takes up more screen space. You have econ bar in the left side of the screen, but it's huge. It's huge. It takes up a lot of screen real estate. Mm-hmm. And also, when you use that kind of menus for installing new apps and to browse your apps and everything, it's kind of more steps to do the same shit.
Right.
I mean, I don't like it at all.
That's a good point.
I'm using the new Ubuntu, but it's classic Ubuntu. I love Gnome. I love simple interfaces. I love OpenBox. I love
Command line.
I love the simple stuff. I like animation, but I don't need animation. Right. I don't need huge icons. I don't need these stupid menus. I don't know. I don't like Mac OS. I would buy a Mac if I would like that kind of interface. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm too drastic, but that's how I feel.
No, yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think that a lot of people kind of, they don't really understand, they don't understand graphic design. And I mean that.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in the sort of, artsy-fartsy sort of, art fag / hipster sort of way. I mean in the real sense. I mean the real rules about just real graphic design. They don't understand graphic design. And the other thing they don't understand is they don't seem to understand interaction design.
Yeah.
It goes hand in hand with graphic design. Interaction design is more of an art, is more of a science.
Yeah.
You know, you have to take into account human psychology, behavior, perception, cognitive science. All these other fields, it's a very nascent field. It's just coming up, and also it's a very multidisciplinary field. There's a lot of disciplines that contribute to interaction design, and you really have to think stuff through, and you have to settle on interaction patterns and getting people to what you just said. I mean, that's a really good criteria. It's not the only criteria, but it's a very good criteria that you pointed out. You have to make it so people have to click less to be able to make the same things. Or if they're going to click more, at least say, well, they click more, but they have more functionality, or it's more simple, or whatever. They get their work done easier or faster or whatever. They don't understand how graphic design works. They don't know how interaction design works. They just copy what they think that it works somewhere else. Because let me tell you, my girlfriend bought a Mac, and even she complains that the interface is very unintuitive sometimes. And I've seen...
Yeah.
And I've seen that. I mean, she showed it to me. They just try to say, Mac OS X is like the pinnacle of interaction design and everything's perfect with it. Let's just copy it. Let's just copy it. But let's not just copy what they do. Let's try to make it like better. But also, let's not only try to make it better, let's try to make it like tweak it so much so we don't get sued. So what do you end up? You end up with shit. It just doesn't work because it never gets thought out. It seems like Unity and the Unity team or Ubuntu or whatever, they kind of need like a really to rethink their not their development schedule or anything like that, but to have like a beta team or a beta research, whatever that's called, like a filter, the people who like beta test their graphic interfaces.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. I mean, they should test this not only with coders,
coders and programmers, but with other people, other programmers, or just other people in general, just users.
People that know that kind of interface theory.
Right. Office workers. It kind of reveals, in a certain way, how little emphasis this company has in terms of basic, quality control, common sense,
Yeah.
I just have this inkling. I mean, Mark Shuttleworth, wasn't he like the second space tourist or something? I'll have the Wikipedia that real quick. Here we go. South African entrepreneur, space. Space adventures tourist. There you go. Space flight. So this guy went to space. I mean, whatever the hell. I mean, I'm not going to knock on him for being a space tourist. That's great and all. And I'm glad he started Ubuntu. It's a great project. And it had really great intentions. But I think that this guy's kind of suffering from the Steve Jobs sort of syndrome, because he's kind of I understand that he's trying to make a brand. I understand he's trying to do innovative stuff. I understand he's trying to make a distro that has real value, not only real value, but value that kind of distinguishes it from other distros, right? None of them stand out. So I understand this strategy, this not only the technical strategy, but the branding strategy of trying to distinguish itself from the other alternatives. Even then, you have to understand that there's ways. I mean, even if that's a really good strategy, you kind of have to. Not every idea that comes to your head that you think it's a good idea is really a good idea. It's not subjective like that. It's not like if I think it's a good idea, therefore it is. No, you know. And the other thing is like, not only that, because that's kind of like putting it in a very megalomaniac sort of narcissistic light, which I really has. But I just think that, I mean, Steve Jobs doesn't do that. I mean, every time like a good idea comes to him, or he has a new idea for a feature in OS X, in the devices or whatever, he implements it one at a time. So people can sort of grow into the idea. He can sort of gouge how people are responding to it. And if the idea doesn't catch on or doesn't work, or people just don't like it or ignore it, he just phases it out. If you introduce too many ideas at the same time, you're just going to like overload people. And then they're not, I mean, they're going to have so many complaints. They're really not find a good way to... I mean, I'm sure there's like a barrage of complaints about this thing. I mean, if you see on YouTube, you just see, you know, so many complaints. So I just think that Shuttlework is kind of boxing the project in. He's doing this whole sort of walled garden thing where like, oh, don't worry. Remember XP, the first version of XP? It's like, hey, Junior, just let Daddy do it. Everything was a wizard.
Yeah.
Now, you know, put this wool over your eyes, you know.
Put your faith in Microsoft.
Flojito y cooperando, you know, all that. I mean, what are they going to do next? I mean, are they going to say like, oh, well, you know, the GNU or BSD TCP stack, that's not good enough. We're going to make our own TCP IP stack. What is it going to go next? I mean, they're going to do their own file system too? Or what? What?
I hope he doesn't listen to the show, so you don't give him any ideas. Well, I don't know. Well, it's a debate. I mean, you could argue that kind of choices are also freedom, but I don't know. It's still.
You think I'm framing the debate in too much of a simplistic sort of dichotomous? It's like a fake dichotomy. Well, you think it's more complex than that, then? Or
what I'm saying is that in Linux or GNU gives you the freedom to make
to not use Ubuntu.
Exactly, and gives Ubuntu the freedom to make their own file system. I mean, you choose if you use it or not.
But I mean, is it really necessary though? And why is it so necessary?
No, not really. I mean, I don't think so, but okay. That's a good point.
Just because it allows it doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's actually good because you're getting locked in, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, what if the project goes...
No, I see your point now.
No, you don't!
So you can shut up now.
Yeah.
I see your point.
we can end the podcast now.
Yeah.
All right. So is that the show? Do we want to talk about?
I guess so.
Do we want to talk about Bin Laden? Have more editing time for you. I promise to keep quiet. I just wanted to bring up the legalities of it. I mean, I'm glad it happened somehow, but I'm kind of sketchy. The legalities of having done it that way are a little bit sketchy. So I'm kind of interested. I'm putting out my lawyers, my international lawyers hat for that. That's the way I'm kind of going to perceive the whole news. That's my interest towards it. I don't have any opinion though, but how about you? What do you think?
Oh, I'm also happy that
Bin Laden is no longer around. About the youth is that they seized a lot of computer stuff. They confiscated computer, hard drives, CDs. The house where Osama bin Laden lived and died, it didn't have a cell phone and an internet connection. So that was wise from a security standpoint. And I'm really curious as what security measures Al Qaeda had for their information. Right now, it's been analyzed, and they already uploaded some videos of Osama bin Laden talking and watching himself on TV. But I want to know if they used encryption or what was their security's approach, because they or the United States news departments and the government has always told us that they use secret methods of communications and how they had this really advanced, really advanced communications. But I wonder if that's true. I want to know if they used encryption, if they had passwords in their computers. That's what interests me. But they haven't released too much information about it.
All right, I guess that does it for the show. You got a lot of editing to do because we kind of...
We suck. I suck in English.
You don't suck at English. That's the problem. You're really good at English. You kind of get nervous, and then you start sucking, and that makes me nervous, and I start. It becomes a suck fest. English suck fest.
I know. I last episode that we received comments, I was wow. Somebody actually listened to the show, so I'm more nervous now because I know people are going to listen, and there are people that they speak English. But I'm happy that we're doing this because I want to improve. So you have to practice if you want to improve.
That's true.
And for me, at least, 2 hours speaking English is exhausting. It's really tiring. I mean, it's really a mental effort.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's intellectually demanding sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and I'm tired, and I'm hungry right now.
Okay, your sugar level's gone down.
Yeah.
Blood pressure's probably gone down too, or up.
On an unrelated note, uh-huh. Well, for everybody out there.
For all your fans.
Yeah, for my fans. I went on a diet. It worked wonderful. Uh-huh. But I'm now below my healthy weight.
Oh, shit.
I overdid my diet. So I'm unhealthy on the other side. I'm too thin.
And on that happy note...
I have to gain weight. So I'm going to eat a pizza tonight.
Great. Next up podcast, we'll put your physical address so they can send you. They'll send you some gifts, some McDonald's gift cards or something.
I would really appreciate if somebody would send me a Kevin Mitnick business card. I sent him $5. Maybe they got lost in the mail, but I never received my business card. So if maybe I could give my P.O. box.
I'll send you one for $10. It'll be fake, but whatever.
Okay.
From Yucatan, this is Siquilpaque.
And this is Mexicali from the other corner of the country. We couldn't be more far away.
That's true.
We tried. But okay, I enjoyed this, even if it was really exhausting.
Even if you still have to edit.
Yeah. And I have to... I have lots to do.
Oh, me too. All right. Yeah. All right. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night. See ya. If you're tired-
reason. Yes, we are so superstitious, and we feel like we have visions of tomorrow. See stars and see the mirror. You'll find an empty kingdom of the future. Let's begin with something simple, like when you're looking for a symbol. You're running to a temple.
HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.